Hello.
Hi.
Wow. I can feel the energy already.
I know the energy's good.
I like it.
Nice.
How the fuck are you?
I'm good. You know what? I'm in a good mood today. It almost got spoiled. It was very close, but I was able
Tell me
to
about that. I think I'm going to regret asking.
You probably will. You know how I am. I'm not a germaphobe per se. But I think the pandemic really did something to me that gave me a little more of that germaphobe thing.
Yeah, and I noticed that change in you.
And now I'm receiving papers from somebody who I was signing some papers with, and they licked their finger. Like, you know, they're behind the glass, and they literally like moved their mask, licked their finger so they could flip the page they're going to give me.
Did you lick the same spot?
The funny part is she sends the papers. I sign them without touching the papers. And then she's like, so this is your copy. She staples. And I'm like, you know what? Is it possible that you can just scan it, send it to me? I'd rather not take like paper because I don't want to lose anything. And she's like, oh, that's such a great idea. But not many clients ask us that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no worries. No worries. I appreciate that. And I'm like, you sick motherfucker. Like, it drives me crazy. Are people who like, they
we
get,
offer that first because it's a means for us to use less paper, ink, and everything else and just be a little bit more mindful of the environment. So
I don't know. When you lick your finger to flip a page, man, I'm like, you might as well just lick my face.
Which is kind of funny because no one would ever thought twice before about it. But since the pandemic, I've noticed that too.
I know. I'm the type of guy, like, again, I'm not a germaphobe per se, but I'm that guy who goes to McDonald's and throws out the first three napkins just in case someone had touched them.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have rubber thumbs and fingers at the office, actually, so we do not lick, just in case you come by our place.
It's good. It's good to be protected on your fingers.
Yeah, for sure.
Protection's key. No one gets pregnant that way either. Welcome to Taming the Hustle.
Or something of the sorts.
Taming the Hustle.
Or something of the sorts.
It's not bad. That could be our jingle.
Yeah, we should. But we'd be stealing it because
I know it's clearly
it exists.
Somebody else.
When our jingle was actually going, we were trying to figure out where that song comes from, and we just can't put our finger on it.
No. Hey, I want to talk about, you live in a small town. That's where your primary residence is. And even though you travel to go see clients all the time, whether it's, you know, Newfoundland or BC and everywhere in between. So that's why I say your primary home, because you're on the road a lot.
I'm like Willie Nelson. I'm on the road again.
More like Stompin' Tom. So I want to talk about small towns.
I love small towns.
Yeah, well, your primary residence is in a small town.
I also love the city, but I love small towns.
Yeah, no, for sure. And one of the things that we pride ourselves, because we have a lot of clients in small towns, and when they first come to us, they're like, I don't want to be that cheesy salesperson with a plaid jacket and those types of commercials. And I've seen them where I live, that we have people playing rugs as guitars.
I have to comment that small communities have equal rights to step up their game.
100%.
So I'm a big advocate of making sure small communities bring in their A game. It doesn't mean just because you're living in small rural communities that you have to slack it off, whether it's marketing, whether it's fashion. Even our office, like, we have clients come into our Kirkland Lake office and it's like, oh my God, like, I feel like I'm in the city here. But it's got that vibe. And it's like, you don't have to have a broken up floor. You don't have to have, you know, an outdated color on your wall. Like, and it doesn't have to cost $1 million. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing. When you bring that big city vibe, you're establishing yourself and your company as an expert. And as much as people are experts in small towns, without that vibe, people will say, oh, you're just a small town Joe or Jane. But at the same time, if you can do that, you're getting out there, you're getting noticed. So yes, I could talk about the flashy graphics, the amazing looking videos, shit like that, which is great. And that's what you need to have that vibe. There are things behind the scenes that you can do that actually can make that big city impact in your small town. And one of the big things is make face-to-face connections. You do this all the time. You shop local, which is a huge thing. You're a member of the local chamber. You attend local events. You connect with people. And one of the things that's so funny when I, with my small town clients, I'll say, you should do a customer appreciation day. And like the response back, like the look on their faces, what the fuck are you talking about? There's 25 people who come in my business every day. Why the fuck would, like, they're coming no matter what. But the thing is, you do that customer appreciation day like Target does or like Walmart does. And all of a sudden people are like, oh shit, I didn't know they were big time.
Anything that stands you out in the crowd too, right?
Exactly. So it is a marketing tip. It's not on paper visible. But it's an event, right? Then when I talk about online connections, because that's the face-to-face connection, but the online connection is, and I preach this to you and you've done it and we've done it with you, is partnering with complementary companies, which could potentially drive business to each of you, but could also drive potential tourists to the town, right? I had a client and I basically asked him, I said, hey, why don't you start partnering with people?
Collaboration in small communities is so impactful. It's crazy.
Oh, I know. And so we basically got a barber to partner with this high-end men's clothing company. And then there, the two local restaurants, the mom and pop Greasy Spoon breakfast place, the nice high-end restaurant and a local hotel. We combined them all and we did a men's weekend retreat, Become the Man You Want to Be. Their social media, they put that online and the people who saw it, it just increased their visibility, right?
Absolutely. Times five.
Oh, exactly. Right. And so,
because what I've noticed from that, Daryl, just sorry to cut you there, but what I've noticed with some of these strategies that you implemented for us, it's like, okay, let's say we are that group of people. Well, not only are you posting it on your social media,
exactly,
but now the hotel is, the men's shop, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So it's like this web. It literally is a web.
Exactly.
And it just blows up.
Yeah, it's a win-win for everyone. And those other companies, they're going to love you for starting that. And when customers go into their store, the next thing they're going to say is, hey, did you go down here and see the barber? Because he's unreal.
And what we've noticed is when we've done these partnerships, we end up working with those businesses too.
Oh, exactly.
Right? Because you initiate something positive for your community without any expectation in return. Mm-hmm. And then it builds that trust relationship that we keep talking about and working with people that share common values.
Yeah.
So it's a win-win all around for sure.
And the last thing I just want to say is don't be afraid to approach someone you don't know.
You don't know who you don't know.
Exactly. If you're not willing to approach a stranger, yes, the barber didn't know the high-end men's clothing guy. But the second they started talking and realized he was kind of pitching this thing, the clothing store guy was just like, oh my God, he was so giddy. Yeah, yeah, let's do this. And now these guys are buddies, right?
Yeah, it's sure. Like, that's how it goes, man.
It's a win-win for everyone. And just get your face out there. Get everything out there. Well, like wear clothes, but get it all out there. Hey, we're going to take a break. So when we come back, I have more of a question for you. I'm a business owner. I have many friends who are business owners and I'm seeing a few go through this and I kind of want to know, what do you do as a business owner when you're ready to leave your business? So I hope you can answer that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm putting you in the hot seat. You're going to answer that for me.
I'm ready. See you soon.
Do you know what CDA means, or capital gains strip, or even LCGE? Neither did most business owners before we started working together.
You're the expert in your business. Let us fill in the blanks so you can achieve more. Hashtag call Renee of St. Cyr & Associates.
So listen, you think you can answer that question for me?
Yeah, of course. I was thinking about this during the commercial though, and we're going to have to keep this at a pretty high level because the uniqueness of every situation, right? So it's not cookie cutter because there are so many circumstances of how to dispose of a business. So, you know, it could be as simple as, am I selling? Am I just closing the doors and selling off equipment? Or am I giving it away, right? We get the question where it's like, well, I'd love to give the business to my kids. And well, that's gonna help me stay away from taxes, right?
Yeah.
So let's make a few things clear. So selling your business will depend on your corporate structure, first of all. Okay. So are you self-employed? Do you have a corporation? Or do you have any more elaborate corporate structure? Do you have a holding company? Do you have a family trust? Do you have partners in that business? Is your spouse a shareholder? If you do have a family trust, are your children and your wife named as beneficiaries, which they probably should? But most importantly, when you are looking at selling your business, you want to seek some advice.
Yeah, for sure.
I've seen so many times where you have a business owner that is super successful. Like we're looking at like tens of millions of dollars of value, and the business owner knows his shit, knows how to make money.
Stop talking about me while I'm right here. You're making me feel real good here.
But when it comes time to sell the business, they have no fucking clue. And it's understandable, right? Because you typically do it once in your career. You do have some people that will have startups and they move on to other adventures and they sell one business to start up another one. But those are like anomalies, right? There's very few. There's a handful of those people. So the mom and pop shops, you've built, you know, a construction company, or you have a certain product that you're providing, or a service that you're providing to the communities that you serve, and you've busted your balls your whole life to grow this empire, and it's now time to sell, and you have no clue where to start.
Yeah,
I have to tell you that you're completely normal, because people don't typically know where to start. So if you're working with a CFP like myself, you can start by reaching out to them. If you're not, you should definitely be having a conversation with your tax accountant to say, okay, well, what is it that is going to happen next and where do I go? Like if you have a larger company, you may actually need to find some sort of headhunter that's going to find a buyer for your business, right?
And I'm glad you said that, because I know a lot of people who are selling their business, they actually don't know who to turn to. We've had clients come to me and say, hey, you do the consulting for our business, like not just marketing, but there's other things that we consult on with your business. And they come to me and they're like, I'm thinking about selling my business. I know I shouldn't, there's lots to involved in it. So can you help with that? And my first thing is I'm like, fuck no. Like we have no idea what to do. Even like I said, when I'm ready to leave my business, I'm going to be coming to you because I don't know what the fuck to do. But some people just don't know. And it's funny because business owners, you're all smart. You've got to where you are for a reason. But it's those things where you don't think of it when you're starting a business. How am I going to do this when I'm done? And then you get to that point being the smartest person in the room. And then you're like, wait a second, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing. And it could be scary. And I think a lot of people, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of people who try to do it on their own, it ends up becoming a ticking time bomb.
Well, the thing is, probably the most impactful is the tax consequences, right? So if you're not seeking help, the inefficiencies that are likely created by doing yourself is going to cost you far, far more than the cost of seeking some advice. Yeah,
for sure.
Right? So hiring your tax accountant to do an analysis on the potential or the expected tax consequences of the sale. That takes me to my second suggestion, is look at this long in advance. Like I've been doing succession planning for years now, and I'm not anywhere near getting out of the business.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right? And what that will allow you to do is make sure that you're implementing things that you can now from a tax perspective that is going to allow you for proper transition at some point in the future. Because some strategies aren't meant to be implemented 2 weeks or 2 months before you decide to sell, right? So if you need to do a corporate reorganization, for example, you need to do that at the right time, and you need to do that in advance. So again, seeking the right help, you get what you pay for.
Yep.
And if the accountant is making some recommendations that are valid, you should be moving forward with those strategies years in advance.
So this is something, and this is for a topic for a different day, but is this something that just gets incorporated to your business plan? Because I know business plans grow with you. They're not supposed to just be at the beginning and then you throw it out.
Well, of course, someone who owns a business would incorporate the income as a source of revenue to fund your lifestyle now.
Yeah.
Your sale of the business would likely be incorporated in your basket of goods, which is going to fund your retirement when you do retire. Yeah. The sale of the business, if there's an excess, if you've done a great job at your business and you have more money than you'll ever spend, right? So your retirement income is fully funded and you have excess resources, then we start to do the estate planning process.
Okay.
And over and above that, you have the ability to then create a succession plan where you may not actually sell the business. If the value of the business is greater than what you require to fund your own retirement, you can then position your children, for example, to take on that family business if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So there's a multitude of things that you can do in advance to try to prepare for that. Nice. Right. And there's separate rules for, say, the farming industry, for example. So that's why it's important for you to really seek professionals to make sure that you've got your ducks in a row, that you've positioned yourself to be as tax efficient as possible, and that you give some sort of indication to your team of advisors of how you wish to proceed with the sale, the liquidation, or just the transfer of assets to the next generation, because all of that can have a pretty significant impact on how the corporate structure is going to be set up.
Gotcha. For me, I think when I come to you, I'm just going to say, you know, I'm ready to leave the business. My kids are willing to take it. But at the same time, whatever I can get top dollar and how to make it work so I can roll around in retirement in a bed full of money, I'm in.
There you go. Let's try to make that happen.
All right, we'll be right back.
Take care.
Responsible investing is about investing in socially and environmentally responsible companies.
So doing the right things. I do recycle my juice boxes, so if anyone wants to invest.
There is a future in thinking about our future generations. Hashtag call Renee of St. Cyr and Associates.
Welcome back, people.
Hi, people. It's funny. I want to talk today about something that our listeners are doing right now.
What's that?
Is how to be a good listener.
Oh, I sure hope they're listening.
I know. It is a different context. They're listening to a podcast. I'm talking about just, you know, whether it's business or personal life, how to be a good listener. And it's funny because when I was younger, I was never good at it. And I feel like I've grown over the years.
I still don't think you're good at it.
Well, see, I think my big problem is that I don't like silence. Silence to me is awkward.
You fucking talk a lot.
I do talk a lot.
You ever travel with a guy like Daryl? Oh my God. Like I put noise canceling fucking headphones just to get a break from the guy. Or actually, if you're the one booking the flights, piece of advice, book them at the other end of the fucking plane so you get a little break from them.
Sorry. It's not like it's not that it's awkward silence all the time, but just silence in general. I feel like if someone's just sitting there and they're staring into nothingness, I feel like I want to validate them. I want them to know that I'm here without saying, hey, if you want to talk, I'm here.
Oh, you sure have the gift of the gab. That's for sure.
That's my mother. That's where I got it.
I'm a chatter too. I mean, people would probably say, oh, you're bullshitting now, Renee. But I actually like silence. I like not speaking sometimes.
I know. It took me a long time to get used to that with you.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk. I want to be like, hey, so yeah, tell me about your day. Do this, do that. How's things? How's mom? How's dad? But I know you like silence. So I got to pick and choose my moments.
We'll be at camp. And that's when Megan and I usually go for our morning walks on the weekends. And we'll walk 10K, right? And so it takes us a fair bit of time. And I'll just walk. I just take deep breaths, listen to the birds chirp. Like, I'm okay with that.
I know. And I've went for hikes with you. And well, sorry, I'm hiking because I'm like
piggybacked.
Huffing and puffing.
So I gave you piggyback up hills. That's his definition of hiking.
That's right. But I feel like, again, we're walking and I'm like, you're telling me to be quiet and catch my breath and focus on my breathing. But also I feel like we're taking a walk and I feel like I need to like, I feel like I'm ignoring you. You know what I mean? And so that just brings me back to kind of, again, we are not doctors. I don't know, are there listening doctors? Are there psychologists out there that could teach you how to be a better listener?
I hope so.
Yeah. I know for me, the way I've learned over the years is I now listen to learn things. So before I used to listen to be polite, which I don't think works because it's not being polite actually, because I'm really not fucking listening to you anyways. So now I listen to learn. So when someone's telling me something, it's like, I try to retain everything. And then I ask questions throughout and not just like, I'm not just asking questions to ask questions. I'm asking to ensure that I understand what's going on, which kind of creates a safe space for others.
Oh, you're such a good communicator.
I am. I am. And another thing I have done over the years, and I know I read this somewhere, so whoever came up with this theory is going to say, they fucking stole the theory off me. And I'm going to say, and I didn't I am stealing it. And I've tweaked it to my own because I probably didn't retain what it was because I wasn't listening. But
yeah, that's more like you.
Yeah, it's a 2-to-1 ratio of listening to talking is what I try
always
to do.
Thought you talked a lot because you just like the sound of your own voice.
No, I fucking hate the sound of my voice.
I don't know, man. Like, you've had me confused all these years.
Listeners, it's funny. When I have my radio show, I tweak my voice just a little bit. And same with this podcast. When you meet me in person, you're like, huh, sounds a little different.
Well, that's not fair. Fuck, I never thought I had a choice to tweak my voice.
I'm sorry.
That's bullshit.
It's too late now. So the 2-to-1 ratio, it's, I did this as an exercise in meetings and in telephone calls and Zoom calls where I'll put a timer on and I screenshot the timer. So I push start, I talk, I screenshot. I push start, I'm talking, I screenshot. And I also know the time of the entire meeting or the phone conversation. And then I look at it and I'm like, holy fuck, it was a 30-minute conversation and I talked 27 of it. And that's when I started to realize is that I'm not actually listening to them. Yes, I'll listen to when they talk, but I'm not paying attention because they told me stuff that I would like to know more about. And I didn't ask the questions, right? And I didn't clarify. I didn't try to figure out what they were actually saying. And then things get miscommunicated. And then all of a sudden you either create more work for yourself, or if it's personal, you know, someone gets mad at you because it's out of context when you really just weren't listening. So I like to also that when I say questions, it ties hand in hand with repeating back what you heard. And I used to hate this as a kid because I had an uncle who would do that. I would talk to him and I'd tell him something about school. It's like, how was your day at school today, Daryl? And I'd say, oh, you know, it was great. We had gym class. We did this. We did that. We dissected frogs. And he's like, oh, so you dissected frogs today. And he would always repeat the last thing I said. And then he'd wait. And I'm like, yeah, it was really cool. And that was like a leading thing. And now all of a sudden I'm talking about dissecting frogs and I'm getting passionate about what I'm saying because how cool it was. And all of a sudden it's like when he left the room, I felt more important.
We actually practice that exercise in client meetings all the time. Vanessa, who's no longer with us.
Oh, yeah, Vanessa. May God rest her soul.
Jesus. She's not dead. She just moved away.
Oh, that's right.
Anyway, after a client meeting one day, she said she really noticed that I rearticulate everything that is spoken.
For me, it's funny because I've had people ask me this before when I've kind of preached how to be a good listener, is that they say, well, what happens if someone's talking and you can't care? Like you're listening and you're like, oh my God,
I would
like
teach to, me.
I would like to jump.
I'm feeling like that right now.
You're looking at the window and thinking, how do
Fuck
I jump out?
Me. It's like watching paint dry. You still are you clicking your fucking phone because you still talk fucking 27 minutes of the last 30.
But I listen to you more.
Okay.
When we get off the air, I'm going to listen to you.
Sure, we can make a cup of tea at the same
That's
time.
That's right, yes. But for me, when I feel like I'm not connecting with what they're saying, people think I have a problem with my hearing. It's more that I actually look at your lips and when you're talking, it's something for me to focus on, but I'm still retaining the information now. Because if you're connecting eyes and you're like, okay, yeah, I'm listening. I'm looking at your eyes. Wow, your eyes are brown. Get a little red in them today. You all of a sudden are off on a tangent. You're like, red, yeah, I need to pick up some apples. And now you're not listening to fuck all they're saying. But when you look at their mouths.
What'd you say?
Exactly. You should be looking at my mouth.
It's hidden behind the microphone. Yeah. I have to stare into your eyes.
So yeah, at the end of the day, it's like, you know, make eye contact. But if you're having trouble, you're starting to lose what they're saying, look at their mouths because you can actually really hear the words when you're looking at someone's mouth.
I always think that I'm a really good listener until I'm reminded that I'm not. So I'm apparently a constant work in progress, but I'm very mindful of it.
We're all a work in progress.
And I try to hyper communicate, but no one's perfect.
No, exactly. So until next time, I'm going to be perfect and you are just not perfect. And that's okay.
I'll be me.
Yeah, you be you and I'll be perfect.
That's what's really cool.
Yeah.
Ciao.
See you, everyone.